Welcome to the Mindful Sobriety Podcast with your hosts, Jane and Amanda. I'm Jane, a licensed psychotherapist and alcohol-free retreat host.
And I'm Amanda, alcohol-free lifestyle coach and yoga instructor. We're so glad you're here.
Allie, hi. Thank you so much for joining us today. We're so glad you're here.
Hi, Jane and Amanda. It's so good to see you both.
So you have agreed to come on today and just share a little bit about your story, your journey of becoming alcohol free, and kind of the doors that have opened since making that choice. But before we get into that, can you tell us, maybe just tell us a little bit about your early life? Give us a little bit of context about who you are.
Sure. So I grew up in Florida. I had what I consider to be like a very lovely childhood. I used to use the word perfect, but I'm a recovering perfectionist, so I try not to say that anymore. But, you know, my parents were like super involved in our lives. My mom was a stay-at-home mom. So once she had me, which I'm the oldest of three children, she decided to leave her job. And then my dad worked, and he had his own business. So he did work a lot. But my mom was like always around and did just like super fun things with me and my sister and brother. She was always coming up with like fun activities and, art projects. And we were outside a lot. We had a pool. So we were often like out by the pool. I also remember other water activities when I was little, like being on the lake or out on the boat with both my parents, but then also kind of our extended family, aunts and uncles.
Yeah. So pretty idyllic childhood with lots of good memories. And you're the oldest of three. So how much younger are your siblings than you?
So my sister and I are 2.5 years apart. And then my brother and I are, oh my gosh, 5 years apart, I think. Maybe six. No, I think it's 6 years. It's hard to like remember how old everyone is when we get older.
Once you're all adults, it's just, you're all in the same life stage.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what brought you to Texas?
We relocated to Texas when I was in my mid-20s, and it was really for my husband's job in the beginning. So he had worked in compliance for a little while at Raymond James, which is in St. Petersburg. And he really wanted to become a financial advisor. In his compliance role, he was going all over the country to different branches and auditing financial advisors. So he got to meet and see kind of the insides of hundreds of practices. And in that role, he ended up having a couple of advisors that were like, you should come join me in my practice. I want to create a role for you. So one of those opportunities was in Nashville, and then the other was in Frisco. And when he told me about the two opportunities and kind of which one would you lean towards, I was like, oh, Nashville, like without a doubt. I had been to Nashville recently, and just loved it so much. And I had actually never been to Texas. I mean, outside of like having a layover at DFW or Houston, I had never done anything in Texas. And so when he was talking to the Frisco guy about that, he was like, well, we'll fly you out here. Like, let's have Allie see it. And then you guys can make like a truly grounded decision. So we came out and I just loved it. Like I instantly fell in love with Dallas and the uptown area, which, you know, we were in our mid-20s at the time. So that was cool. And just, I loved how everything was so walkable. So we ended up deciding when we were in the airport on the way back to Florida that we were going to pick Dallas. And we also did kind of assess like just the other job opportunities for me. So I was in corporate communications and we felt like between Dallas and Nashville, there were way more companies here. I mean, you could just drive up and down 75 in the tollway and see all of them. So we felt like it would be better for my job growth as well, which it definitely was.
Awesome. So you grew up and went to college and everything in Florida and pretty much your whole, like up until mid-20s was there.
Yeah. So I was at home on the East Coast of Florida until I was 17. I graduated high school at 17, where my birthday falls in the calendar year. And then I moved to Tampa and went to college, and I was at USF, graduated when I was 21. Again, I was like young to graduate because of my birthday, and then stayed there where I had interned and then ended up getting a job until we moved to Texas in 2014.
Okay. Well, tell us a little bit about alcohol and kind of when your relationship with alcohol began and how that evolved over time.
Yeah. So my like personal relationship with alcohol began when I was in high school, but recently, kind of in my journey of going alcohol free, I realized that my relationship with alcohol really started when I was a very young child because it was just constantly around me. So even though I was not, you know, engaging in alcohol personally at all when I was little, it was at every kind of boat or pool or celebration, you know, barbecue, 4th of July, like whenever my family would get together, my dad's one of five siblings, there was always drinking. And I realized now that I'm 35 that for me, that created associations. Alcohol was associated with everything. So like alcohol was associated with having fun, seeing family, hanging out with family, relaxing, unwinding after work, like getting together, it being a sunny day, like literally all of the things.
It was a pervasive character in every situation you were in your culture, it sounds like.
Yeah, it really was. And so then just a little bit about like my education. So I was in a private like Montessori school until I was about seven. And then we moved not far, but we moved to a different town a little bit north of us. And that was zoned for like a really great public school. So I went to fourth grade there, and just, it was a good school, but like kind of where I was versus where they were in the curriculum, I was a little bit ahead already. But my mom didn't want to put me ahead because I was already young for my grade. So she decided to homeschool me for middle school. So then I was homeschooled from fifth grade to eighth grade. And that was a really, like, I loved it because my mom was everything and
a lot
like
of
my
fun.
Best friend. Yeah, it was so fun. We did so many cool things together. And like I said, she loved kind of like creative and exploratory and hands-on learning. So we did a lot of that in addition to like the textbook work too. But then otherwise I was just, you know, her little sidekick. Like I would go on all of the errands with her. I would go to the gym with her, like sit outside while she was in a workout class and like read my book. So I did really love that. And then we decided that like when it got to high school that I would go back to kind of like the normal school system. And that was me going into public school. We had an IB program. So I went into like the pre-IB track. And just going into that high school though was such a culture shock. Like I went to big high school. There were thousands of kids. It was very different from like anything I had ever experienced. And that was where kind of like my introduction to alcohol happened. I forget, I think I was in actually in 10th grade, like when I first went to a party and, you know, everyone was drinking beer. And
well, and from a developmental perspective for teenagers, like your social group is less focused on your parents and your family and becomes more focused on your peers, and like they are everything. And so it makes sense that like, you're like, oh, this thing is here and this is what people do. So maybe I need to engage in this.
Yeah. And I think I was maybe even more susceptible to that since I had been out of the school system for middle school. And so I really was. Yeah, I was the new kid and I was like, oh, okay. Like this is what people do and everyone's drinking. And like, I desperately wanted to show that I was like normal because there's a stigma that can come with being homeschooled that like homeschool kids are weird and you know, they're super religious, which we weren't. We weren't really that religious at all. But I just wanted to like show that I was normal and I was cool and I, you know, wanted to fit in and just do what everybody else was doing at that time.
Absolutely. Total normal human desire.
Yeah.
So at that point, did you notice anything problematic or any consequences to engaging in drinking?
For sure. So, like the first time I ever drank, it was a couple beers, but then, you don't really like beer when you're young. And so
No, I remember
that
thinking it was
quickly,
horrible.
yeah, that quickly turned to like liquor, fruity liquor drinks. And then when you're teenagers and you're trying to get your hands on liquor, stealing liquor from your parents, that would often go in like water bottles. And then
Yeah.
it just kind of turned into like drinking liquor out of water bottles when we were on the go, doing whatever we were doing with our friends. And unfortunately, like I did condition myself at a very young age to like drink beyond my limits. And I definitely drank way too much as a teenager and a young adult. And I also had like such terrible anxiety those years, especially when I was in college. I think I was 19 or 20, probably 19, when I got my first panic attack. And
Oh.
like now I see that that wasn't a coincidence, that I had kind of started drinking to help with like social anxiety. And then I drank like irresponsibly and kind of a lot, at least for like my age and my size. And then that made just like my overall anxiety so much
So much
worse.
higher. Not to mention with social anxiety, it helps in the moment, you feel less inhibited. But then you're more likely to say things or do things that you wouldn't normally do. And so the next morning, you're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I did that. And then the social
Yeah.
anxiety is like 10 times worse. And you've
Yes.
got anxiety and all the things.
Yeah, especially for somebody who is like naturally more shy and reserved. It was like, yeah, I mean, certainly some things I did when I was drinking, I was like, oh my gosh, just completely humiliated the next day because that was so outside of my character.
Right. Oh. Yes, looking back, I feel so much compassion for that teenage version of myself that did that over and over again
I
and just
know, it's really
didn't
sad
have the
like now.
resources and the information to realize what I was doing.
Yeah, it is so sad to me, especially when I look at children now that are like in that 13, 14, 15 age, and I think about myself and like how I felt at that age where I felt like I was, so grown up.
Absolutely. So maybe tell us a little bit about when you started considering letting go of alcohol and maybe choosing a different way of living life.
Yeah, so it was definitely a journey. My like personal use of alcohol lessened, I would say, after college, and then even more like once we moved to Texas and we were getting a little bit more serious about our careers. We were married, we had a house. Like we still drank, but at that point it was within what I would consider kind of very normal limits of
Like socially
drinking.
acceptable
Yeah.
ways of young
Socially,
couples going out and having
We would
fun
drink
and
with friends. We would drink, if we were going out to dinner, we might, watch a TV show and have wine on the couch when we were watching Scandal. Like, I mean, there were some crazy nights still, I would say, in like the mid to late 20s, but way more few and far between. And I feel like my drinking, it was, I would drink more than some friends, less than other friends. It was kind of in the middle. But still, like I would wake up and I would be like, oh, I wish I wouldn't have had that last drink. Like, why did I have that last drink? Or I wish I just wouldn't have drank at all because it really didn't add any value to like my experience. But I did, and now I feel like complete crap and I can't get anything done. And I'm so like type A, high achiever. Like, I love being productive. And so to have kind of just that wiped out feeling on a Saturday or Sunday where it's like, oh, now I'm not going to get anything done. I hated that.
Well, and that probably
So,
also contributed to some anxiety and panic of like, I have all these things I wanted to get done, and now I don't have the motivation or I don't feel well enough to do them. And then there's that cognitive dissonance that comes from that. And
yeah, I'm sure there was a lot of that. I didn't even realize it at the time, but I definitely think you're right. So then I had experiences with going alcohol free for what I would say like medical reasons. So I was on Accutane twice when I was in my mid 20s to early 30s. and you can't drink when you're on Accutane for like 6-ish months. So I didn't drink at all then. I, of course, didn't drink when I was pregnant in my early 30s. And during those periods, I didn't even want to drink. Like, I didn't miss the alcohol. I was like totally fine. I never craved it or had any sort of like physical dependency on it. And I felt so great. And like, in some cases, my skin would clear up or I would notice other things that were improvements. But then I would just, there would always be some sort of a social situation after that, that I would get back into it. Whether it was, you know, a concert or a birthday party or my birthday or a vacation, like something where, again, everybody was drinking
alcohol.
Society
demands that we must drink.
Yeah. And so I did. I didn't even really, you know, question it that much. And then in 2022, after I had my son, I really had no desire to drink at all in the beginning. I had kind of a physically traumatic and long labor. And so I was just like in a rough state for the first 10 days or so.
Is 10 or 14 days. Baby?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And so I wasn't one of those moms that was like, oh, bring me wine or champagne at the hospital. Like, no judgment to moms that, you know, want that.
Yeah.
But physically, like, I was not there. Like, I feel like alcohol probably still would have made me throw up like a week or two after I had my son. But then it was my birthday, like not long after he was born. And, you know, it was a nice day. The sun was out. We had some really nice wine that we had got on a trip from Napa a couple years prior. My mom was in town. And so we opened the bottle of wine. I had like 2 glasses of wine. I mean, it was not a big deal. But that was like the open door back up to drinking, you know, from not drinking for 10 months or however long it had been. And so my son was born in early September, October, then I would say, you know, we would have a couple drinks sometimes, like after the baby would go down. It was super stressful, of course, like being new parents and just all the things that you're trying to navigate. And so I think
life
for
being
us,
turned upside down.
Yeah. And you don't really get to spend much time with your spouse, like at least not the kind of time you were used to. And so really, I think drinking or like having a drink on the couch after the baby went down was like, in a way, our way of just feeling normal again and feeling like we were somewhat back to ourselves. And so
like engaging in this like adult type activity.
Yes, a very adult type activity. And so I did, you know, drink throughout the holidays that year. And it was such a mental like game because I was breastfeeding. And so I was always thinking about like the baby's feeding schedule and like trying to time it to where, you know, maybe I would have one drink while he was awake. And then it was like, I would have a few more because I knew I had this window where like, I wasn't going to have to feed him for a while. And I can remember this advice that I got from an OB who was like, oh, the new rule of like thumb for drinking and breastfeeding or pumping is if you can find the baby, you can feed the baby.
Oh,
and I was
my
like,
gosh.
What? I mean, that seems like kind of intense. I mean, if you can find the baby, that's like, what, one step down from being blacked out?
Like, and so what if you drop the baby or he slips down and you pass out? I don't know. I would have had all these images of bad things.
Yeah. So I didn't go that far with it, but it did kind of give me this like permission slip
like
of like, I can, you know, drink a little bit more and like not be so worried about it. So even still, though, if I would have more than like 2 drinks and I would pump after he went to bed, I would like label it differently so that then the next day I could dilute it with like non-alcohol.
Milk. Did you have those testing strips? I used to have these testing strips and you could dip them in the milk. And if they turned gray, then that meant it was contaminated with too much alcohol.
I never did that. No, I just kind of like, I was just like mentally calculating everything.
Yeah. Mental gymnastics.
The strip probably would have taken some of that weight off of me.
Except then you have to dump it if it's contaminated, which is painful.
I did dump sometimes, even though I didn't have those strips, just if the next day I was like, oh, I think I maybe drank a little bit too much.
Like, it's not worth it.
Yeah, no, it would just be not worth it. And luckily, like, the pumping was really only at night because at least until my son was 4 or 5 months old, we were almost exclusively breastfeeding all day long. And so then I would just pump like once before I would go to bed.
Yeah.
And the other thing is we weren't drinking that frequently. Like I would maybe be drinking once or twice a week.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like that often that I had to do
that. More like if there's a social occasion or something like that, or a night out.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And so then it was in 2023 when I just started to feel like really over it. And I didn't like want to drink, and I just wanted to like not even feel that desire anymore. Because even though I didn't desire alcohol, like in those periods when I wasn't drinking, like I said, there would always then be some social situation after the fact where everyone was drinking, and then I would want to drink in those cases. Mm-hmm. So that's what I mean when I say, like, I just wanted my desire for it to be gone altogether.
Well, and I think like there's also all the thinking that goes into like, okay, there's this event coming up. I really don't want to be hungover. I don't want to drink too much, but I want to drink something. So I'm going to have two drinks. But then you get there and then you have two drinks. And you're like, but one more will be okay. And then you end up having four because someone else buys another round. And then you wake up the next day and you're like, well, here I am.
Yeah.
Hungover, just like I said, I wasn't going to be.
That and dang last
like
drink.
Very stressful, you know?
Yes, for sure. And so I had actually, like, I'm not a very religious person. I mean, I believe in God, but I don't like go to church on a regular basis or anything, but I had actually like prayed that God would just like take my desire away. Yeah. And this wasn't something that I prayed for very often. I maybe prayed for it like 3 times ever, just when I would think about it. And then one day in September, right before I turned 35, I woke up and it was after a night where my husband and I had went out to watch a football game at a bar. We had 2 cocktails at the bar, and then we went to dinner, just him and I, and I had 2 glasses of wine at dinner. So by the time I got home, I mean, I was pretty much fine, and it wasn't a crazy night by any standards. It was actually a very like tame drinking night, but I just woke up and I was like, I'm done. Like, I just don't want, like, that drinking last night didn't add any value to my life. Like, I could have had the same night and not had any alcohol. And I also, like, I had been thinking a lot about our goals during this time period. And when I thought about all of my goals as it related to like my health, physically, fitness related, you know, financial goals that we had, career aspirations, wealth building goals, like alcohol was just the one thing that I felt like if I removed, everything would get better and easier.
Yeah. It's like this one simple thing, you can remove it and it's like this barrier to kind of keeping you at a certain level. And then it's like a life hack, basically. Like, you have more energy, your health is better, you're more motivated, you feel more confident. It just, it makes such a huge difference.
Yeah. And I think I had a journal at one point that was like, what do you want to say no to this month? What do you want to say yes to? And it was this concept of like letting go of things that like don't serve you so that you can have more space for things that do. And so that might have actually kind of put that way of thinking in my mind.
Yeah, but, like beginning to reflect on that idea.
Yeah. And I can remember telling my husband like that next morning, you know, that I was just done drinking and if he wanted to do it with me. And he was like, yeah, I mean, I'll do it for like 30 days. And I was like, okay, great. You know, I didn't really know how long I was going to do it, but I knew it was going to be a little while. And I also know that like any habit change is the hardest in the beginning. So I was super grateful that he was going to do it with me for at least the first 30 days. And just happy to have kind of a partner in the start of that journey.
Absolutely. So that was September of 23. So what, about 7 months ago?
Yeah.
And what was that like for you in those first weeks and months of making that choice? Hey.
It was honestly like a lot easier than I expected. I think I found an author, her name's Amanda Kuda, on Instagram. Like, I forget if I found her right before I made this decision or right after. I think it was right after.
Okay.
And she was in the process of launching a book called Unbottled Potential. And I just really liked what she had to say about how letting go of alcohol like allowed her to step into her purpose and just really level up like all areas of her life. And her book includes like journal prompts with some questions about what were some of the subconscious messages that you received about alcohol when you were really little. And so those questions really helped me understand like how alcohol, kind of came to play any sort of a role in my life. And it made it so much easier for me to just disconnect and kind of disassociate with it. So it
Was
really
it
didn't
kind of
take
like
long.
being able to see that a lot of the beliefs that you had subconsciously were all almost like an illusion, just like this cultural construct that wasn't really real?
Yeah, I guess it was like that it was an illusion and that it was also something that like I had never decided myself in the first place, that it was just, based on how other family members operated or how other teenagers operated. Like it wasn't a conscious choice that I made. Oh, I want to drink alcohol. And the other thing was I had kind of been on my own health journey. So we got pregnant, our first pregnancy was in 2020, and I had like a super traumatic miscarriage. I mean, all miscarriages are traumatic, but the way that mine happened physically was like very PTSD, like
What the,
horrific.
yeah.
And that led me to like really start searching for answers as to like why that had happened. And I can remember when I talked to the OB who helped me like in the ER, she was like, what happened was very normal. Like first trimester miscarriages are very normal, but like how it happened was not. And so then when I saw her for my follow-up, she was like, normally, after people have a miscarriage and it's just one, we just tell you to kind of go on about your life and try again, and like it probably won't happen again. But I was terrified to like try again after what happened. I mean, I had to have blood transfusions and it was very scary. Like I thought I was gonna
That is
die from all the
scary.
blood loss. And so I was like, well, I don't just want to try again and hope for the best. And so she was like, well, if you want, like we can do the labs that we would normally do for someone that's had like two or three. So I went ahead and did them, and they were pretty robust labs for what a traditional doctor would do for you. And I found out that I had like the MTFHR mutation in those labs. And so that just meant that I needed to be on like a different type of prenatal that would better support a pregnancy. So that was one thing that I could change, but I still felt like I wanted more and like I needed answers. And when I met with my primary care doctor that year, I was like, I feel like my hair's falling out more than normal. And so she had tested my thyroid, and said everything came back within normal levels. You're fine. But again, I was like, I just feel like I'm not fine.
Like something's
And
not right.
yeah. And so that led me to functional medicine. And so I had started on this functional medicine journey in May of 2021, where I did a lot of like way deeper labs and kind of discovery into what was going on. I made a lot of like health and lifestyle changes from, plastics and the type of water filters I had, my diet. Like I cut out gluten, dairy, and eggs for a while just to see how my body reacted in terms of inflammation. I've since been able to add back in dairy and eggs and be just fine, but I still don't do gluten. And I'm like a major label reader. Like I try to avoid all of the inflammatory seed oils and like dyes and just other things that I know are not good for you, especially in this kind of fertility phase of life. And alcohol, again, was like the one thing that I had kind of given myself this pass for, where I was like, I know that even though some people claim the ingredients are pure, depending on if you're drinking liquor or if you're drinking, wine, it's like actually the ingredients in most wine that people drink are not pure. Like a lot of them can have up to 70 ingredients, and like those 70 ingredients aren't listed on the bottle. So
Well,
it
and
also
the main ingredient of ethanol definitely is not pure. It's a classified one carcinogen, and it's known to be toxic to humans. So that right there is like, can't be good for inflammation.
No, it definitely was not good for inflammation. So cutting it out, like, I also feel like was kind of, it just helped create more alignment in like my health journey and kind of the beliefs that I had come to form by the time in my life, you know, 2023, 2024.
Yeah.
The other thing that started happening very soon after I eliminated alcohol is I started getting just like crazy intuition feelings. I've always been someone who like acknowledges and respects intuition. You know, I like to do meditations, but there was something about removing alcohol that just made everything so much more clear for me, like very quickly, and also in a way that was really hard for me to ignore.
I wonder if it's almost like alcohol was a barrier to being able to be in touch with your intuition, and also you removed that, you were able to recognize it.
Yeah, I think so. And for a while, I kind of wondered about that because I was like, I was only drinking 0 to 2 times a week. Like sometimes we would go a week or two and drink nothing. And then, you know, other times we would drink maybe once or twice a week, but it wasn't like I was drinking that often. But now that I know the effects of alcohol and like how long it takes your body to process it, the hormonal effects that last for weeks after, including just kind of the impact on like your mental state, it makes a lot more sense to me as to how that was blocking my intuition, even though, you know, I was meditating every single day and I was drinking alcohol like one or two of those days.
Right. Yeah. Well, and it takes, you know, for your baseline level of like the amount of dopamine you have to experience positive emotions. When we drink alcohol periodically, like our threshold for feeling dopamine is dampened. And so we're not going to get the same pleasure from a beautiful sunset or, you know, nature or petting our dog or hugging our children, you know, and so we are kind of dampened to those experiences of connection and awe and joy. And so when, even if we're only drinking once or twice a week, we are never really at a good baseline with that. And so I think after eliminating it for a decent chunk of time, you start, you know, your body reaches homeostasis with that and you can feel the effects of everyday joys and pleasures and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I definitely felt my emotions way more. And I think you're right that that was very connected to the intuition for me because, I don't know, I felt joy a lot more. And I also felt like irritation in areas where I felt dissatisfied with my life a lot more too.
Interesting.
And yeah, and specifically like related to my job and what I was doing for work. Like when I was little, if you'd asked me what I wanted to be when I grew up, I would have said a stay-at-home mom. Like that's what my mom was. And I just really thought that whenever I became a mother, that that's what I would want, just to be able to be with my kids, you know, more, a lot more kind of how my mom was. And when my husband and I first got together in our early 20s, like this was never hidden from him. Like I was like, I want to be a stay-at-home dog mom. I want to stay at home with our dog Kingsley. And like, that was a joke. Of course I didn't. And like, we both had to work, especially at that time. And then when my career started taking off and I started like making more and more money, I became a people leader. I, you know, built a team from the ground up. And like, at one point I had 6 people that were reporting to me and then other people in kind of cross-functional roles who were also looking to me for leadership. And so it just got a lot harder to think about walking away because for many years of like our marriage, I was actually the breadwinner. Like my husband's a financial advisor. And when you're first starting out as an advisor and building your book of business, like it takes time and taking kind of a very low salary for a little while. So my career was kind of the thing that had provided the stability and the certainty for us for a long time. So we did still talk about like my desire to be a stay-at-home mom. I probably in a perfect world would have loved to stay home after our son was born, but we didn't feel like we were in the place to make it work at the time. And so then we were kind of on this track of like, oh, well, maybe after our second baby, you know, someday, whenever that happens, then we'll be in a place where I can stay home. But after I stopped drinking alcohol, I was like, I don't want to wait that long. Like, we weren't pregnant. We weren't even trying to get pregnant with our second yet. And so I saw my husband too, because by this point he had started his own business and he was an entrepreneur. And so I saw, like, he was able to work remote whenever he wanted and well, whenever he wanted, which was most of the time, and, be home with our son while he was little. And I was the one that I worked remote for a while during the pandemic. And, like, even kind of after the pandemic, my company was on remote work. But then after I went back from maternity leave, pretty soon after I went back from maternity leave, like 4 or 5 months, then the offices reopened. We were then working from home twice a week and going into the office 3 days a week. My office was super far away from our house, so, like, with traffic, that was a crazy commute. And everything that, like, I had come to love about breastfeeding my son was like, now it's like, nope, now you got to figure out, like, the whole pumping thing and, doing the whole pumping mom life, schlepping all of this stuff back and forth to the office. Like, it was just so painful. Like, I mean, in so many ways, like, the pumping stuff was not, like,
Physically
painful in the
painful
moment,
and
but it was just, like, mentally, like, it was painful. And I just hated driving away from my house on those days that I would have to go into the office. And I felt like, okay, I'm literally driving away from, like, my purpose and my priorities to go, like, where at home, I'm so, like, desperately wanted and needed. And then I'm going someplace where, like, I love my team and my team loves me, but I'm, like, one of thousands of people, that are pulling up to this parking garage. And it just started feeling very, like, misaligned. And I think that I, like, seeing my husband do it, I just realized that I desperately kind of wanted that for myself, that freedom and that
Right.
fulfillment and just the ability to, like, be more present.
Well, and
And
like
this
you
is,
said, like being more aware of the irritability, like you were more aware that, like, I have cognitive dissonance here pulling into this parking garage and moving away from my family and my home and my son. I'm not just going to discount this feeling and stuff it down. I'm actually paying attention to it. Like, this is really uncomfortable. And what if there is another option?
And those what if there is another option, like, ideas just started coming into my head so much more, where I was actually on a walk one day and I just got this, like, thought that popped into my head that said, you've always relied on your job for stability and certainty, but what if you can, like, let go of that and never struggle again? And, like, at first I was like, what? Like, who put this thought into my head? Like, this is crazy. But then I was like, well, maybe the struggle, like, it could be maybe you'll never struggle financially, or it could be maybe you'll never struggle with, like, this internal conflict that you're feeling, or maybe both. But then I started to think even more about the financial component, like, started kind of getting these thoughts of, what if, like, you think it's so hard to walk away from your job. What if my job that I see as, like, providing me all of this financial stability and security is actually just prolonging our, like, ultimate aspirations and kind of wealth building goals? I do know that there are people out there that are doing it and that there's ways to do it that, like,
Well, and if you never allow yourself to believe it's possible for you, it will never be possible for you. If you allow yourself to believe it's possible, maybe it will.
Yeah, maybe it will. And I think the, yeah, it's like some of that, well, how would I even make that much money a month? It's like, you really have to get in touch with, like, your purpose. And for me, it was about, I don't know, 2 months, maybe even less after I stopped drinking, that I found this, like, free 3-day workshop on discovering your purpose. And it was only an hour or two every day, but it was, like, in the middle of the day. And so normally I wouldn't have been able to do that with working full time because it would have conflicted with my meetings. But this workshop was being held during a week that I was already going to be off and that I was taking vacation and going to Florida. And so I was like, okay, I have to do this. Like, it's just kind of a sign. And it included, like, some meditations and some live talks and journal prompts. And it was, like, during that time that my purpose came to me in like such a more clear and connected way than it ever had before, where it was like all of those little things that people tell you to think about to discover your purpose, like, well, what did you like to do when you were little, and what are you good at, and you know, what does your dream life look like, all of those things that I had kind of thought about, it like packaged it together for me and kind of showed me this career of like coaching other women and helping them navigate challenges that were similar to struggles I had overcome in my own life, whether that was like the miscarriage, the gut healing journey, this transformation that I was on now of like, I've been in a corporate career for 13 years and, you know, there's a lot that I like about it, but I also am like hating leaving my house every single day and, you know, prioritize right. being a mother. So what do I do with that? And I just felt like some of the things that I had struggled with over the years were like intentional so that I could help other women not struggle, you know, through some of yeah. those circumstances, at least not as much as I did.
Like there's purpose and meaning in you having had those difficult experiences.
Yeah.
It was teaching you something.
Yeah, it definitely was.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about what that looks like for you now that you're out of the corporate world and you're kind of beginning to do your own thing. What is that like for you?
Well, it's been amazing. So even like before I was officially out of corporate, like I kind of thought about just the female ancestors and like all of the things that, you know, they were faced with and the life choices that they made and how most of at least my female ancestors, they either worked or they, you know, stayed at home. Like there wasn't this online world, there wasn't really a ton of like in between options for them. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of what my heart was calling me towards. Like at this point, I knew that I wanted my husband to like provide for our family financially just so that I could like have a minute to like breathe and not have yeah. that weight on my shoulders. Because especially after becoming a mom, it was just too much for me to like feel like we were dependent on, you know, me working and my job and my salary and all of those other things.
Mm-hmm. But, especially being in an office 40 hours a week and, you know, not being self-employed and beholden to someone else, it's hard.
Yeah. So I definitely wanted to like let him kind of have a turn at being the sole financial provider. But I strongly believe that like women are the ones that lead our families because women just, they're like the backbone of everything. You know, they have the intuition, the will, they can like nurture and just really propel like whether it's the next generation, our children, or even our husbands and like their businesses and their ventures forward so much more. So I kind of started to get a desire to do that like even while I was still in corporate, just to like, my husband has this business, like, what can I do to kind of help him, like, you know, manifest like big things happening in his world or whatever else. And then like my separation from corporate kind of happened in waves where actually before I left in March, I took like a leave of absence from work. So I was on a leave of absence from December to like late February, early March. And I did that just to like really focus on my health and healing. Like, you know, we had our son, we knew that we would want to get pregnant again with another baby and healthy pregnancy. And so there was a lot of work that I wanted to do to like just replete my nutrients and repair my gut. Yeah. I had done another gut test and there were a bunch of things that were coming back is off. And like some of them were actually similar to things that had come back on my test in 2021, which in a way is like frustrating because you're like, well, I did all this work to like fix these things. Why are they showing up again? And then when I read my provider's plan for me, one of the things that was mentioned over and over was like reducing stress. And so I was like, okay, I say all the time that I'm in constant fight or flight. Like, how am I supposed to like go all in on this healing plan if I can't get out of this like constant cycle of stress and overwhelm.
Like you realized I need some drastic change.
Yeah. And my boss was like so encouraging and was like, have you thought about taking a leave of absence? And I hadn't, but then her saying that like made me look into it and kind of realize like, oh, I could do this. And like, I could actually just focus on myself and my healing. And like, that felt so freeing to me. And making the decision to take a leave of absence was hard because there were a lot of other people that I worked with that had like health circumstances or family circumstances that like they could have taken leave of absence too, and they didn't. And so then, and in some cases I felt like they had harder or like worse situations than me. So I was kind of like, who am I to like take a leave of absence when these other people aren't? Then I also thought, well, maybe I can like set an example and like encourage more people to actually use this benefit, like when they have a reason in their life that warrants it.
Absolutely.
So doing that was like really great because it was the first time in my life that I just got to be. Like, it's very different than when you take a maternity leave and you're like figuring out how to be a new mom and like working around the clock at, you know, being a new mom. Like, that is not
right.
Any type of like, no, that's not like a self-care leave at all.
No.
But this was really like my opportunity just to think about what I really wanted. And one of the things I realized I wanted, and going back to your original question, was like, whatever I did after corporate, I didn't want to do things where I felt like I was creating stress and overwhelm for myself and feeling burnout and feeling like I was constantly having to like stuff everything into my life. I wanted to be really intentional and make sure that whatever I was creating, I was doing out of a place of like love and desire and like excitement and fun, and not because I felt like I had to or I should. That was like another thing that I realized I did all the time is like, oh, I should do this. I should be doing this. Like, so I didn't want to do that. So now, in terms of like how my days look, it's very, what I feel like is balanced and aligned, where I do have the time and space to just like be present with my son, be a mom, do, you know, whatever mom things are required. But I also, you know, still have help with childcare because I am starting a business, and that's really hard. Like, when my husband started a business, we had childcare. So like, why shouldn't I have childcare when I'm starting a business? And I think that's a thing that
you
some
need
moms,
time that's not like divided between two different things. You need like uninterrupted time to really do what you're going to do seriously.
Yeah. And so I'm just learning so much in kind of that time about coaching and limiting beliefs and like really leaning into how I can help other working moms like through the process of discovering their purpose and tapping into their desires and really like designing their dream life from a place of like what they want versus what maybe has been conditioned in them or expected of them over time. Because that is like so powerful and has been such a like freeing thing for me.
Absolutely. I mean, talk about like an antidote to feeling like you need alcohol in your life is actually, what if you just drastically created the life that you really want to be living? What if you believed that was possible?
Yeah. And then you really are like, okay, I don't need alcohol in my life ever again, because I am so happy with my life that like,
I'm
why
so
would
fulfilled.
I want to ever feel like groggy or down or hungover
or numb or absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, how can women find you, women or men, if they, you know, want to connect with you or if they're interested in working with you in the future? What's the best way to connect?
So I actually put together a free guide as a gift for your listeners, and and it includes 4 ways that working moms can leverage their corporate careers to find freedom for themselves. Okay. I also in that included 7 of like my favorite self-discovery questions that were super helpful for me just in kind of figuring out what I wanted to do and what I really wanted my life to look like. So if we can put that in maybe the show notes, y'all can download that and just
Absolutely.
Use it as a resource to help kind of find some of the answers that I think are already within all of us, but they can just Yeah. be really hard to uncover on our own. And then I also offer free 15-minute phone consultations for anyone who wants to just chat about their situation and see if they could benefit from working together one-on-one. One of the things that I hear from women so often who are in corporate and like know that they don't want to do that anymore, they're like, I just don't know what I would do instead. And so that's what I want to help women with is like that. I just don't know what I would do instead piece, mm-hmm. because I feel like if you don't know that, you're not going to be like motivated enough to figure out all the things that you have to figure out to like actually leave corporate. Like there's a lot of course, financial considerations and other things that come with leaving corporate, but you really need that first piece of like the, what would you do instead? What would your life look like if you left corporate? To motivate you to action on all of the other things that will actually like make your corporate exit plan a reality.
Absolutely. And I think it's important for women to know that just because they don't know what that thing might be, doesn't mean that it doesn't exist.
Yes.
You know, it does exist for them. They just haven't tapped into what really inspires them and what do they feel called to do to live into their purpose and make a positive impact in the world.
Yeah. And a lot of times it's not because they, something's wrong with them or they can't figure it out. It's just that they don't have like the time and the space that is required for that deep, like introspective work. And so that's one of the things in the guide is like, how can you actually create the time and the space for yourself so that you can start this process? Because if you're trying to start it from like that overwhelmed, I'm stuffing everything in, I don't have enough time for my kids, so I definitely don't have any time for myself. Like, it's just not going to be as effective.
Absolutely.
I post about this a lot on my Instagram. So that's another place people can find me.
Oh, good.
Is Allie.Eldridge. So it's A-L-I and then a period and then my last name Eldridge. But I just have so many thoughts about this internal struggle between like motherhood and working and making money and like how to do it all. I believe that women deserve it all, but I do not believe that women need to do it all. And I think that's like a big differentiator is just figuring out how you can be strategic about where you spend your time and how you use your skills and your gifts to actually like enjoy your life and the way that you get to show up every day.
Absolutely. I think that is so needed for women today. You know, like the women who came before us fought for our right to work and to have careers and to not be relegated to the home if that's not what we choose. You know, now we have choices, but we also need support. Like we can't do everything that a stay-at-home mom does and have a full-time career and expect to be healthy and balanced and enjoying life. Like we have to have other structural supports in place. And so I think that the work that you're doing is super important for helping women begin to dream that it's possible for them and to actually have a concrete plan of what that would look like, how that could be possible for them.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think what you said too about like relegated to the house, I think that's another fear that some women have that like, maybe they don't want to be in corporate anymore, but they're like, well, I don't want to be a stay-at-home mom because I would just go crazy. And I don't want to like be changing diapers and doing, you know, nap time all day. Like, I feel like I need to have something for myself. It's like, we've come to believe that like, there are just these two black and white ways. And like, if you're a stay-at-home mom, that means that you do all of the household things, you do all the cooking and cleaning, which maybe you don't like doing. Like, I don't like doing that stuff. And people think that maybe it means that like you don't have any childcare, you don't have any support or time for yourself. And like, I want to show people that it does not have to be that way. Like there's not a magic button that you can press to get this like perfect in between world. It definitely does take work, but there are lots of ways that people can make it work if that's what they desire.
Absolutely. And being a stay-at-home mom, if that is someone's chosen career, you still need support. You still need childcare. You can't work 24/7. You still need a partner to come in and carry the burden. You can't run a house and keep it clean and shop and cook and manage the calendar and take the kids to school. And, you know, like that's like three jobs right there.
I know. I always felt like it was so unfair when people who stayed at home, they would be like, well, I feel like I can't, you know, get my hair done or spend money on myself because I'm not making any money. I'm like, what? Like, you are doing so much work. You are making so much money for the household. It's just in like a different way than maybe your husband is bringing money.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for listening. We truly value each one of you. In support of the podcast, please follow or subscribe to the Mindful Sobriety Podcast.
We'd love to connect with you via Instagram at Jane W. Ballard and or DFW Yoga Girl. Sending you love and light.